Christ is my witness. I had nothing in my heart against you. Judas! Judas! Bawls he, and swung up the telescope to brain me. Two things saved me. One was Miriam's horse. Startled by someone raving and capering a yard away, it reared, and since Miriam was holding t'other end of my noose, I was jerked violently off my feet and went down half-strangled but out of harm's way. My other saviour was one of the astrologers who ran in front of Theodore, waving his arms and crying out, possibly a warning that the omens weren't favourable for cracking heads. In which case, he was dead right, for Theodore smashed him full on the crown with the telescope. And it was a lethal weapon, after all, for it stove him in like an eggshell. It had happened in seconds. I realised that Miriam, seeing him come down the hill in a towering rage, had sensibly decided that the more captive I looked, the better, so she'd noosed me. And in an instant, there beside me lay the corpse of the poor prophet with his skull leaking, and Theodore was dashing down the telescope, staring at his victim, and suddenly burying his face in his hands and running howling towards the red pavilion. He seized a spear from one of the guards on the fly and began to stab the surrounding carpet, cursing something fearful. Then he flung the spear aside, shook his fists at heaven, and darted into the pavilion. And the assembled military and civilian worthies stood silent and thoughtful, determined not to look at each other, like a convocation of clergy when the bishop has farted extempore. They knew the unwisdom of noticing, having seen his royal tantrums before. "Come!" snapped Miriam, and led me quickly in behind one of the nearest tents, where she dismounted and removed the noose. "Sit on the ground, say nothing. All may yet be well. I must see Damesh." And off she went, leaving me in some disquiet, sitting obediently and trembling like an aspen, an object of studied lack of interest to the aforementioned worthies. They acted as though I weren't there, which suited admirably. I'd no wish to be noticed, especially by the frothing maniac in the red pavilion. I'd seen his quicksilver change of mood during the night, from mild to angry, and the sight of those wretched prisoners, and Miriam's explanation, had convinced me that he was fairly off his rocker. But none of that had prepared me for the homicidal rage of a moment ago. That settled it. He was a murderous maniac, and I was his detested prisoner. I'll not weary you with my emotions as I sat there in the sun, or my terrors when presently a squad of burly ruffians in leather tunics arrived, bearing manacles, and marched me away from the tents to a little stockade within which stood a small thatched hut with a heavy door. They thrust me in, ignoring my inquiries for Miriam and Damesh. I didn't ask for Theodore. Chained me and left me in a stuffy half-darkness to meditate on the mutability of human affairs, with a couple of spearmen outside. Some things were plain enough. Mastiat and Fazl had lost no time. The Galacordon that Napier had wanted was in place, and Theodore knew it. Since he'd been on top of Selassie with a telescope, he would also know that Napier was within striking distance, and that the game was up with a vengeance. Hence, no doubt, his irritable conduct to your correspondent. And whether he chose to fight, fly, or lager on top of Magdala, the pressing question was what he would do with his European prisoners. Cut our throats out of spite and die with harness on his back, or hand us over in reasonably good condition like a sensible chap? Which he wasn't. There was no way of even guessing. On the one hand, here I was in chains, which boded no good, but didn't suggest hasty execution, and Miriam had said all might yet be well. And since Theodore had kept our folk captive, often in chains for years without killing any of them, bar a couple of ab-servants, it looked odds on that he'd spare our lives. But then again, the man was balmy, and there was no telling what he might do now that his back was well and truly to the wall. To keep my mind from glum speculation, I tried to remember how many times I'd been in chains before. 4 or 5, perhaps? Proper chains, that is, not the derbies used by the A-Division peelers to restrain obstreperous revellers, but your genuine Bilbos. There'd been Russia, where Ignatieff had caged me half across Central Asia, and the Gwalior bottle dungeon, and China, when the imps collared me before Peking, and Afghanistan, when that frightful bitch Nareem Man was going to qualify me for the Harem handicap, at which point it struck me that my present situation, while most disturbing, was grace itself compared to these unhappy memories.
I could only hope that I'd not be called on to walk in my new fetters, for they were easily the heaviest I'd ever worn.